Welcome back to the Disciple Makers podcast. Today, we have another special episode outside of our normal format. Last week on the podcast, we discussed the broader conversation about race and racism from a biblical perspective. But this week, we really hope to focus in on the personal experiences that people of color have had in regards to racism. Today, we are joined by three Disciple Makers staff, Kayla Olszewski, Bria Griffin, and Alex Seifert, and they are going to share their stories with us related to racism they have experienced personally. They are also going to share about their experiences growing up and living in contexts where they were the minority. Normally on the podcast, our focus is teaching about different topics through the scriptures and conversations. But on this episode, our intention is to step back and give you an opportunity to listen in to the stories and experiences that some of our staff have had. We hope that as you listen and hear their stories, you will be moved to seek out the stories of others you may know who are different from you. In Genesis 1:27, we learn that God has made each of us in his image. More than that, we learn in Psalm 139:14 that each of us is fearfully and wonderfully made. This means that all of our differences and similarities are created and formed by God on purpose. And we ought to value the similarities and differences of our fellow image bearers because of this. Through Kayla, Bria, and Alex's conversation, I was also reminded of how important unity within the body of Christ is, and how humility, listening, and considering the interests of others are key ingredients to that unity. Listen to Philippians 2:1-4, which says the following. So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection and sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Looking to others' interests is at the heart of the gospel, and it is only possible for us to do this because of what Jesus did on our behalf, that he took on our likeness and our burdens, and he died in our place. Because of Christ's love for us, we can extend ourselves in love to others in the same way. We are so thankful for Kayla, Bria, and Alex having the willingness and courage to share their stories with us on the podcast this week. We hope their conversation is helpful for you as you consider how to look towards the interests and concerns of others in your own communities and to image the love of our Savior. So let's listen to Kayla, Bria, and Alex as they share their stories.
Welcome to the Disciple Makers podcast. In this episode, we're going to continue the conversation about racism, and in particular, we want to shift the focus in today's podcast about the stories that our staff have experienced of racism. So you'll hear the stories of Bria Griffin and Kayla Olszewski and myself, Alex Seifert, and what it's like to be a Black, Brown, and Asian staff and our experiences from the past. So our goal here is to share the stories, to share the narratives. And we hope this will be beneficial for our students of color to be able to relate to our staff, to know that our staff aren't removed from racial remarks from others and the experiences that we've had. We also hope this will be helpful for our white students, for them to understand and maybe get a behind the veil picture of what it's been like to receive racism and be able to engage with their classmates, their fellow believers in their fellowships, and the culture at large. Well, we want to start off by sharing some of our experiences growing up, and really that kind of like first episode or first event of racism that each of us have received in our different contexts. Now, just to give a little bit of a brief background, each of us have grown up in environments where we have been the minority in the places that we lived in. So we have that type of experience coming in. But I would like to hear Bria first. Could you share just a little bit about your that first episode, that first event that happened to you growing up, and that first racism that you experienced?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first episode that I experienced of racism was when I was in middle school. So I was in about seventh grade, and I got called down to go to the principal's office one day. And when I got to the principal's office, the office was just filled with other Black students in his office. And the principal sat me down and was like, there was a student, like a white student, who made a hit list. She wrote a bunch of people's names on the bathroom wall, people that she wanted to kill. And it was filled with Black names on the wall in the bathroom. And my name was on there. And the student that wrote the list, I like didn't even really know her. Like we barely talked. Yeah, I just didn't really have a class with her or like any kind of interaction with her. But she hated me so much that she wanted to, you know, see me die because of my skin color. Yeah. And then after that, I just felt like, wow, like there's people out there that don't like me just because of how I look. Like they don't even know me, but they like hate me just because of my skin color. And yeah, I was just like, so, just so shocked by that and just so hurt by that. Like I was very hurt and I just felt so sad that this student, this seventh grader, so she was pretty young, like for kids, like she, yeah, hated me because of my skin color. So that was the first time that I ever experienced any kind of act of racism that I am aware of. Yeah, was in middle school. How about for you, Kayla? What was your first experience?
Yeah, I'd say my first experience was probably when I was in elementary school. I remember playing on the playground with one of the little playground boys that I knew who was in the same grade as me. And I think as that school year went on, I developed like a weird little crush. I was probably like in fourth or fifth grade. And I had been chatting with a friend about it because I'm like, oh, he's cute. You know, you're little elementary school kids and you don't really know what you're doing. And so this girl went and told him. And so over the next week, this little boy was acting a lot different. And he'd run away anytime I'd come near him on the playground. And I was just very confused because that wasn't how it normally was. And I ended up asking him, like, you know, what's wrong? And he said that, well, you like me. And I'm like, crap. He knows, you know. And then
he knows. Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, crap, you know, he knows. And I kind of start by just denying that fact. And then he said, well, that's good because you can't like me because you're Black. And I'm like, what? And so he walked away, and I don't think I had the capacity to really process that information or that idea, because I definitely knew that I had brown skin, but I don't think I really realized the impact that my brown skin would have on another person until that moment. Yeah, that just left me feeling a little bit uneasy and unsure kind of how to proceed after that. But that was my experience. Alex, what would you say your experience was in the beginning?
Yeah, I think my first experience was I remember being on the bus, and it was after school, and I was just like talking to this kid. He was an older kid, and I remember we're getting near his bus stop, and it was this white dude, and he was just kind of like intimidating looking, and you know, I'm 5'6" right now, but you know, Filipinos tend to be, you know, not that tall. 5'6" is impressive, so I think my dad's white side giving me a few extra inches there. But I just remember him calling me this Chinese racist mark, we'll put it that way. And I wasn't like mad. I was just like, what is that word? And And it wasn't until I came home and I told my dad about it, and he like flipped out. I've never seen him get so angry about it. And I remember him, I think, in a good heart and of the mindset that, you know, I think the culture was in, you know, the melting pot mentality, is that he, you know, he was just angry because he's like, well, first of all, you're not Chinese. And like, I, you know, I'm 13 years old. I'm like, I know that. And, but he's like, you know, you're white, and which is true. Like, I'm half white, I'm half Asian. But he knew, that that was a racist remark. And I think seeing that was like, wow, this was an inappropriate thing to say to me. And so, yeah, I remember exactly who it was. I remember exactly where I was. I remember, seeing my dad's reaction. So it was, yeah, that was kind of my first one I can remember. Thanks guys for sharing those experiences. Yeah, I, you know, I can even just tell from the stories and, you know, just even, you know, your reactions, you know, it's not, it was very hard to go through some of these, things. And, yeah. And I hope, you know, this just sheds light on, you know, these are actual experiences that we've gone through. So you guys shared your first experiences of racism and, you know, even your responses to that. But what was it like just overall growing up, you know, your experiences, you know, after that first event, you know, was this recurring racism that you received? Was there more particular events? Yeah, I'd love to hear even like how your family may even responded to the racism that you experienced. Yeah, Bria, why don't you go ahead and start us off again?
Yeah, so like I think after that, I was definitely fearful of going back to school. Like, even though the student was expelled, I'm pretty sure, like, she couldn't go back to school. But I was definitely fearful of just what other white students were thinking of me. And if they also wanted to, yeah, see me die because they didn't like Black people. So I had a lot of fear. But I think eventually I started to just get over that fear, I guess, where I just felt less fearful. But I think after that middle school experience, I just got pretty used to being the only Black kid in most of my environment. So like all my soccer team or basketball team, because I grew up in the suburbs. So it was normal for me to just be the only Black girl in most of my settings. And it definitely felt pretty lonely at times because I'm different from them. Like, my hair is different. Like, my culture is just so different. So I often felt like the oddball in the group. Like, when we would have sleepovers, I would wear a scarf on my head, but they wouldn't have to wear that when they went to bed. So I felt even odd with, like, doing that, you know, wearing a scarf over my head when I go to bed at night. So I definitely felt, like, just so different. And the odd one in the group. So yeah, I think I experienced more covert actions of racism. So for example, just this past year when I was living, so I just moved to Lancaster, but before I moved to Lancaster, I was living in a small white town, and my neighbor was very clear that he did not like Black people. He would hang outside on his porch all the time. And every time I would walk out to go to my car or just to like be outside, he would always go back inside his house so quickly every time. And the first few months I was like, maybe he just needs to get back inside for something. Like, he had a family, so he had like a few kids. So I just thought that maybe he just needed to go back inside to be with his kids or to do something in the house. But it happened for the whole year. Like, he would go back inside of his house so quickly. And then I noticed that my roommate, who's white, would go outside and he would say hi to her. And when white neighbors would walk past, like, he would say hi to them and talk to them. But for me, he never talked to me. And I just felt so hurt by that. And I didn't understand why he just did not like me so much. Like, I wasn't sure if he was threatened by me or just, yeah, I had no idea. But he didn't even know my name. And that just really hurt. So that's kind of how it's been, I think, throughout like since middle school. Just like a lot of feeling like the oddball out and feeling lonely in some of my friend groups because I'm the only Black person, and just some like covert experiences of racism, like my neighbor. Kayla, what was your experience like after that first incident of racism?
Yeah. So after that, in middle school, my family, particularly my mom, we moved up into the Berks County area, which is farmland. We lived in like a little development that looked like, you know, suburbia, but there was really only like three other Black or brown families that lived in that development with us. And so kind of stayed in the same context as we moved of being around mostly white people. I remember in eighth grade, there was this kid who decided to, yeah, just say a lot of racial slurs and call me the N-word pretty regularly. And I was pretty bothered and annoyed by it. And so I went and told my mom, and then she went immediately to the administration. And so we sat down in like the principal's office, and my mom kind of made me walk out in detail exactly everything that I told to her and exactly what he was doing. And so, you know, the principal thanked me for sharing. He apologized on behalf of the student, and the student was eventually called into the office. He got detention and got in trouble. And then he comes out and then tells everyone what I did, that I went and told on him. And everyone was like, well, what's wrong with you? Like, I'm sure what he said really wasn't that bad. And I'm like, but I mean, he called me the N-word. And I'm like, I don't really know what you mean about how it's not that bad, but okay. Yeah, I remember in 11th grade chemistry class, there was this kid who would make fun of me on the regular about how my hairstyle was like pretty much the same. I had a very classic hairstyle that I kind of fell back on pretty regularly, but I was the person who was maintaining my own hair. And so it was just hard for me to maintain it. And I hadn't completely learned what it looked like. And so he decided to make fun of me every single day about it. And then so like I asked him to stop and he wouldn't. And he ended up saying a few other racial remarks and slurs. And so I go home, tell my grandma about it because she lived with us, and she went and told my mom, and then I was like, oh no. Because my mom, she was wonderful because she really defended me and kind of took up that cause. And so she immediately went to the administration. We sat in the principal's office yet again, and the kid was called in, and he apologized, particularly because the principal made him apologize. He got a detention as well. And then again, I was like in the same spot in middle school. Like I was seen kind of as the bad guy for speaking up about these things that were happening. I mean, my nickname in middle school and high school, as soon as I moved to this area, was BK, which stood for Black Kayla. There was like three other Kaylas in our class. And so they decided it would be a good way to differentiate, you know, me from the other Kaylas. I'm not really sure why they didn't get a nickname, but obviously I'm the only one that stood out there. And so they would call me that pretty regularly. And if I would complain or ask them not to, once again, I was kind of seen as the bad guy. I was asked, you know, what's so wrong about it? We're just poking fun. It's like, fine, we love you, blah, blah, blah. But yet, I still felt very singled out because of the color of my skin. And they didn't treat anyone else who was white the same way. So I didn't really know how else to interpret it, but to interpret it by the fact that you're only doing this because I'm Black. And you feel the freedom to do this because I'm the minority here. And so I'm one voice out of maybe 10 friends who are around me saying the same thing. And they're kind of affirming each other in their microaggressions in a way.
At that time, were you like, man, this is not right, this is racism, or were you like, you know, I just don't want to cause any trouble, I just want to fit in, you know? How did you kind of respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily know if at that moment I wanted to define it as racism, because I'm like, well, it's not slavery, it's not segregation, like it's not these Jim Crow laws. And so because of that, I'm like, well, it's not that bad. Like, I just don't want to rock the boat, particularly because I felt like I was almost too white to fit in with my Black friends who were in school, because most of their context were Black people with their families and things like that. And I felt like I was too black to fit in with my white friends. And so I'm like, if I want to continue to stay and like have a good friend group and find a place to be, I feel like I just need to be quiet about it. Alex, what has it been like for you in middle school and high school as you've experienced racism?
I think after that incident I shared with that kid on the bus, it was really the first time I had to like reflect on my race. You know, growing up, I don't remember that ever being a thing in elementary school, even though it was a similar context. I knew I looked different, but my parents were kind of like, no, you're the same with them. And I'm like, yeah, sure. as like a third grader. but then like it just became more acute in middle school. You know, you get all these other schools kind of combining into one, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this, but you know, just get like the side glance as you walk by, and just felt like I was just like this weird Asian kid that just stood out amongst everybody, and there wasn't even like other Asian kids. There was just like one or two other black people in my grade or like in the surrounding grade. So we were definitely like a minority group. Yeah, I think you know, transitioning into college now, and I'd love to hear, you know, you guys' experiences too with college. I don't know about you, but I loved going to Bloomsburg University because it was so diverse to me. I was like, wow, there are more black people here. there's a bunch of Asians. It like for me, it felt it just felt like freeing. I'm like, man, I'm not like the center of minority attention anymore. And it was great just to like have that environment being there. Did you guys feel similarly when you entered college as well? Were you like, yeah, like this is awesome?
Yeah, I think in college, I like went to Penn State with two of my best friends who are black, who grew up in Harrisburg with me. So even though Penn State's more of a predominantly white school, it was nice having these two girls that know me really well, and who are also black. Yeah. And then when I joined the Christian Fellowship, it was mainly white, and it was definitely an adjustment, trying to adjust to like the worship style and the teaching style. Cause I was used to, like, I grew up in a black church, so it was very loud, and the pastor would like yell. He would yell when he would preach, like stomp his feet, and the audience or like the congregation would like yell, interact, and like, you know, clap their hands. They all had their fans and stuff. So it would that was kind of the environment that I was used to. And then I came to a large group meeting at DCF, and it was very quiet, and the speaker like just spoke very softly, and the worship was also like, it wasn't super quiet, but it wasn't like what I was used to. And I was like, wow, this is so different. I never experienced this kind of worship style before. And I wasn't like, I hate this. I was just like, wow, it's different. I'm not used to this. But I made friends very quickly in the fellowship, and it became like a place that I felt very comfortable in. And I loved it. I loved going to large group and being a part of DCF there. But my friends who also grew up in the black church with me, they felt like they didn't really fit in. So they stopped coming to DCF. And they ended up like finding different clubs to be a part of. So for them, it was hard to adjust to, because it was very different than how we grew up.
Why do you think it was easier for you than your friends?
Well, I think for me, because I made a lot of good friends in the fellowship right away that became like my people, like my group of friends that I would hang out with all the time. So I think the friendships really helped me to adjust, have an easier time adjusting to the culture of DCF. But for them, I think they didn't make friends as fast as I did. So I think they felt like it felt a little bit more foreign to them when they would go, because they didn't have as many good friends and yeah, it just felt very different. But for me, I felt like, oh, my friends are here. Yeah, I want to be a part of this and keep going. That's probably the main reason that I would say is just because the friendships really helped me to feel comfortable in that space.
Is there anything else from your college experience that you want to share?
Yeah, I don't think I experienced many acts of racism in college. Not that I can think of. I had friends who would say certain comments that were kind of hurtful, but they didn't like intend to. They just came out the wrong way. So, for example, one of my friends, and we're still friends now, and he like grabbed my hair, like wanted to feel my braids that I had, and he like just was like playing with my hair, and he was like, "Oh, this feels like jump rope," and I was like, "Huh?" Like, you probably shouldn't just, first of all, grab a person of color's hair without asking, and then you probably don't want to compare it to jump rope. So, yeah, just like small things like that, like certain comments that I feel like aren't the best comments to say. Because I think it's like a big deal for people of color. Like, their hair is an important part of the culture. So to just grab someone's hair or like touch someone's hair is like, I can't speak for every Black person, but for most Black people, it's like a no-no. Like, don't just grab our hair. I wasn't like super hurt by it. I just felt like, yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say for you, Bria, that, yeah, mentioning the act with your hair is just really helpful, because historically, you know, as white people have interacted with Black people with their hair, they've been told that their hair is nappy or disheveled or not, yeah, kind of devalued over time. And so when white people kind of interact with Black people's hair, there's that historical pain and kind of suffering that's like attached to it. And so that's why it's kind of uncomfortable, because it's like, you like my hair as it entertains you, kind of, if that makes sense. So I feel like that is a helpful thing to mention, because I feel like I have the same experience of a friend coming up and touching my hair, and they're like, "Oh, it feels like a lamb or like a sheep. This is so nice," and just like is petting me, and it makes me extremely uncomfortable, because it's like, you could care less about my hair, or you were making fun of my hair because of the way that I styled it, because it's the same thing every day. But as soon as it is like a main attraction or like an amusement park ride for you, like, you're totally okay with my hair. And though they might not have ill intentions behind it, but what you feel, I feel like, is worth mentioning and talking about in that.
So your high school experience did not sound that exciting, at least when it comes to, just like receiving racist remarks or, you know, people touching your hair. I'm wondering, like, when you went into college, you went to Kutztown, which, you know, you said that it was nearby where you lived. Was there anything that changed? What about like when you went into, became part of the DCF fellowship there, KCF fellowship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went to Kutztown University. Kutztown was about a 10-15 minute drive from my house. But first I actually went to Reading Area Community College, which was in the middle of Reading, Pennsylvania. And so that was an extremely diverse scenario. And it kind of, yeah, for the first time, I think, as you were saying, when you went to Bloomsburg, Alex, you finally felt like you weren't the only minority there. And it's like, oh, there's a lot of people here who actually look like me. And this is surprising, because Reading was only like a 20-30 minute drive from my house. And so my house was in a very white context. And so leaving that house, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, I was just surprised by this world that was just, you know, 20-30 minutes away from my house. But when I went to Kutztown 2 years later, it definitely was still more diverse than my high school, but not incredibly so, if that makes sense. So even our fellowship, we still had maybe a max of 10, maybe 15 Black or brown people, which still was a good amount, I feel like, for the fellowship size. And I regularly interacted with, at least three other people of color on a regular basis. And that kind of grew as the years went by. as well. And so I'd say within the context of KCF, I had never felt any acts of racism within that group or even microaggressions, I'd say. I don't think I really felt that there. I felt like a very safe place and environment. I think I found, like, I actually found my place, I think, there. Which is interesting because the flip side of that, as I was continuing to go to my old church or just interacting with friends from high school, like those were actually where those acts of microaggressions or racism were continuing, because I would have people say, you know, oh, like you're the whitest black girl I've ever, you know, known because of the way that I speak or the way that I present myself or the way that I dress or what music I listen to. Like that was a pretty regular statement that was said to me. I can also remember, I'm also still friends with this person. They're great. I love them. But this example, it was like opening up a medicine bottle. And if you know, when you open up like a medicine bottle, there's often like cotton inside the bottle. And so he asked me to open up the bottle, asked me to take out, you know, what was inside of it. And, you know, kind of made, I know you know where I'm going here, made the joke of like, oh, isn't it nice you're kind of back in the old days where you're out picking cotton? And I'm like, oh, you just said that. Wow. But we're also in a group of other white people where I feel like I can't react, because if I react to that statement, I'm kind of like the angry black woman and nobody wants that. And so I kind of just took it and swallowed it and was like, huh, all right. So it's just moments like that, that, you know, sometimes, yeah, they're covert acts where you're just talking about someone's hair and it feels like it's not like that big of a deal, but it can be very overt at the same time where someone's asking you to pick out a piece of cotton and talking about the good old days kind of a thing. And that's just not cool.
Wow. Yeah. That's enough to make you angry.
Right. And I feel like I'd be justified in being angry. But for me, I feel like I can't justify that to other white people, if that makes sense. Because I feel like I'm constantly kind of having to justify any type of racial suffering that I'm going through, because for them it's not in the category of racism. It's like, oh, it's not that bad because it's not slavery, it's not segregation, and so the thing that I just did to you, that's not racist, that's just me playing a joke.
You know, this is the half white Alex coming out, and I want to talk to, you know, our white audience too, is we are not saying that all white people are bad. And bringing up this, bringing up these deaths and bringing up the experience of minorities, of black people, is just to get real with what the feelings, what the attitudes are going on. And this isn't a saying that, wow, everybody who lives in the farmland or everybody who lives in the suburbs, man, y'all are racists. That's not what we're saying. We're sharing the experiences that we had, and you guys are sharing the experiences that many black people are having today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in no way, shape, or form, I think, are we expecting or hoping that people will leave this podcast feeling guilty about being white. I don't think that being white is wrong. I think that no matter who you are, no matter what your race or ethnicity is, you are made in the image of God and you are beautiful and you are loved because the Lord has created you. Like, he has given you that value and that dignity. I don't want you to hear that as we're talking about this podcast. But I think one thing that's just helpful to consider is that if you are one of our white listeners, like, you do have a culture and that culture informs the way that you view the world. And so as we're talking about these experiences of racism that we've experienced, these white people have spoken out of their culture. They're like, well, my culture says that straight hair is the hair that you should have. Or maybe curly hair, but very manageable hair is the way that is the hair that you should have. And so as they interact with people of color, like Bria and I, or even Alex, potentially, I don't know if he has these conversations about his hair necessarily, but as they interact with those things, like, you are kind of unintentionally saying that something about us is wrong, but it's because you're speaking out of your culture and that's what informs your worldview. And so I think it's just helpful, like, if you've not considered the fact that you have a culture, consider it. Yeah, think about how that really informs you and how when that culture comes against a culture that's different than yours, what that interaction is. Because sometimes that can end in one of the stories that Bria and I have shared today, or that Alex has shared today, that he has experienced.
I don't know if you guys have felt this as well too, but there's like this fear of being like misrepresented for kind of like sticking up for what Black people have gone through, and trying to give a little more narrative to the story, at least from your experience. But is there like a fear of how people will respond to that? You know, almost like going back to your experience in middle school and high school, where it's like, hey, if, you know, if I stick up for myself, well then, you know, people are going to look at me as an angry Black girl. Do you guys experience that, or do you have fear of that happening to you guys?
Yeah, I definitely had some fear of that. I think I was afraid. So like one big fear that I had was just putting on my bonnet at night to sleep before bed. Like I just feared what people thought about me, you know, wearing that scarf or that bonnet. What did my white friends think? Like, are they like, oh, what's that weird thing like on your head? So definitely fearful of just like living my life and kind of showing my culture in different ways. I definitely think I would try to just be gentle and calm and smile a lot.
Kayla is shaking her head right now too in agreement.
Yeah, I feel that 100%. Yeah. I've experienced the same exact thing. It's sad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I would try to like sound proper and, you know, use manners because I didn't want people to stereotype me. Like I wanted people to like me and be my friend. So I would try to really just act a certain way in front of them. But yeah, so you're pretty similar, Kayla, in that.
Oh, for sure. I can think of my first experiences with people. Whenever I meet someone, I make sure I sound extra articulate and make sure I'm extra friendly. It's like, okay, I know you see me as being Black and that might be slightly threatening. So how can I make this scenario or this experience the most enjoyable experience that you possibly could have, so that whatever worldview you're viewing me, like whatever lens you're viewing me in, is completely destroyed, and I've rebuilt it up in, okay, Black women are great. They are nice. They are trustworthy. Like, I can be friends with this person.
Yeah. Bria, I'm wondering too, you know, you did mention about your experience with that neighbor, and, you know, I don't even know what, if you call it covert or overt racism, but, you know, like when those type of things happen, you know, like how do you respond to that? Are you like, you know, are you afraid to like stick up for yourself, or are you, you know, is this something that like, you know, just kind of like sets you back emotionally, or yeah, just wondering how you respond to that.
Yeah, I think at first when I started to notice that he would go inside very quickly whenever I was outside, I would try to think through, like, how can I get this person to like me? Like, maybe I'll just smile and say hello really quickly before he goes inside. Or maybe I'll, like, bake him some brownies and take it over to his house. I don't know. I just kept thinking through, like, how can I help him to see that, like, there's no reason to be threatened by me. Like, I'm not going to hurt him. Or if he was threatened by me, I just wanted him to get to know me before he made conclusions and judged me and wanted to avoid me. So that was my first response, is thinking through, like, how could I get him to like me and to say hi to me? Like he's saying to like the rest of my neighbors and my roommate, he's like speaking to them. Like I want him to speak to me too. After it just like kept happening over and over again, I kind of just like, forget it. Like, it's fine. Yeah. And I just felt very hopeless that he would ever change. And yeah, I felt very hopeless that he would ever like me or like speak to me. And just, I felt very hurt. Like, I texted some friends and told them what was going on and asked them to pray, because I just felt very sad.
I'd love to hear how you guys respond to, you know, why is this important to share? Why is this important to share our racist experiences that we've had? You know, is this just a time to just bash on white people, or, you know, is there something else to what we're doing?
Yeah, I think what you were saying, Alex, about like how it's so important for people to just be educated and to learn. I think one way that people can learn is just by hearing people's stories of what they've been through and to see more about the reality of racism that people go through every day, whether it's overt or covert. And I think that these stories, like, I think there's just something about sharing stories where you just kind of feel more compassion for the person when you just hear their stories. And yeah, hopefully by hearing Kayla and I share our stories of what we have been through, whether it was in middle school or just like throughout the years, hopefully people would just grow in compassion and just join us and weep with us.
I think for me, I think the importance of why we share this is because I think for Black people in general, like our Blackness, it might sound strange, but is really important to us, if that makes sense. Because I don't know about if this is true for you at all, Bria, but I grew up not liking the fact that I was Black for a long time. Not because I just randomly hated myself or something like that, but because the culture around me was saying that something about me was wrong and that difference just needed to be weeded out somehow. And so I think I even remembering asking the Lord, like, why did he make me Black? Because I feel like I'm enduring this suffering. And it just would have just been so much easier if I was born white. Like, I would just fit in immediately. Like, I disdained my hair. Like, I disdained almost, it felt like every part of my Blackness. And so I think when, like, the importance of sharing this, because this is also for white people who are listening who have said phrases, for instance, like, I don't see color. Like, I just see you as just like a person. But it's like, but if you don't see me in my Blackness, you actually don't see me, because the Lord didn't just accidentally make me Black. Like, the reason the Lord made all of these different races and ethnicities and stuff like that, like, he made it for his glory. And so we can worship the Lord well when we recognize other people's differences and races and celebrate those things. And so I feel like people are missing out on worshiping the Lord alongside of me for making me Black. I think another reason why I share this is because I bring this up not to just make white people feel awkward or uncomfortable, but whenever there is a sin issue, you're loving your neighbor by bringing it up. You're hating them by keeping it in the dark and not talking about it. And so because I want to love the white people, my white brothers and sisters around me, like, I'm bringing up this conversation of racism because it's real. It's a reality that I and other and many Black people are suffering through. We're bringing it up not to just say shame on you, but instead it's like, realize that this is a thing and this is what's happening, and we can change because of the grace of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. I think one thought too, I can definitely relate to you, Kayla, in the fact that just like praying that the Lord would make me white. Like, I would pray that prayer when I was a kid, like when I was a kid, because I wanted to be like all of my friends who were white. And I definitely did not like being Black as a kid. So I definitely can resonate with you there. But I think one other reason that we are sharing our stories is for the people of color who are listening, so that they can just realize if they are feeling lonely or sad, that they can realize that they're not alone. That Kayla and I have also experienced racism over the years, and we're also hurting, just so for a comfort to them as well as they listen and as they grieve, like we're grieving with you.
Yeah, Kayla, Bria, those are really good. And it's actually interesting because I've actually had the similar experience of, man, I wish I could just look more white instead of sticking out, like especially... You really notice if you're Asian when you take photos, because like, you know, you smile and then you're just like, man, you can't even see my eyes. Yeah, I used to just be so embarrassed taking photos, and I'm like, man, I just wish I was white just to not to do that. But yeah, I think the reason why that, you know, I shared some of my experiences too, and is just to bring in, you know, fellow Asians into the conversation, and to, you know, to share, like, you know, hey, particularly once you've grown up in environments where we are the minority, that, you know, we can relate to our brothers and sisters who are Black and brown, and also just to share from, you know, the white perspective as well too, that you know, we should learn and hear the stories that fellow believers are sharing in their experiences as well too. So thank you guys again for doing this podcast together, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, I just want to hit on your point about Genesis, and yeah, like, we're all created in the image of God, and you know, he created us like on purpose to display his glory, and yeah, I don't know, that was just really, yeah, that was just good. That was just like a good perspective to get back to, like, what does God say about who we are? So yeah, let me just pray us out. God, thank you again for this time together, and we ask for your blessing. We need it, and we need your help. Please give us the opportunity and the chances to weep with our fellow believers of color, and listen to their stories. I pray that you would give us compassionate hearts and hearts that are empathetic and are willing to listen first instead of speak. I pray for unity, particularly among our believing members of the body, that we would stand united, love one another, so that the world could see who you are, God. And we ask that you would be glorified, and yeah, you would just work through our society today as we're figuring out how to respond and how to respond rightly to the events of today. God, please manifest yourself today as we work through racism and injustice, and would ultimately your glory be shown throughout all this. In your name, amen.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Disciple Makers Podcast. We hope that Kayla, Bria, and Alex's conversation was helpful for you as you seek to consider the interests of others. Each person has their own story and experiences, and we are so thankful that Kayla, Bria, and Alex were willing to come on the podcast this week to share theirs. We encourage you to go and hear the stories of others as well, especially the stories of those who are different from you. As always, you can find resources for further consideration and learning in the show notes, so please check those out if you are interested. Next week, Sarah and I will be back having a conversation with Mark Fodale about the perseverance of God. We hope you'll join us then for our next episode of the Disciple Makers Podcast.